Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
If you enjoy deep dives into solved and unsolved murder cases, then Murder True Crime Stories is the podcast for you. Find Murder True Crime Stories on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
8:15 on this Wednesday morning before Thanksgiving. One of the things we're thankful for, Ronald Surpass, former NOPD superintendent, head of the Nashville City Police, Washington State Police, currently a professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, a consultant to many departments, started as a street cop, right? Tell me about your career with NOPD. Ronald, good morning.
Well, good morning. Happy Thanksgiving to you and everyone who's listening. I joined the police department in June of 1980. My first assignment out of the academy was the French Quarter. Walked a beat on Bourbon Street, rode a horse on Bourbon Street, became a sergeant in the central city, the 6th District, rode motorcycles, DWI commander, became a lieutenant, was the assistant commander of the French Quarter, and then went to one of the patrol districts, got promoted to captain, was in charge of the crime lab, one of the most fulfilling jobs I ever had that I never thought I would like. Then I became a major for 6 years, then deputy chief for 5 years, and then Washington for 3, Nashville for 7, New Orleans for 4.5, and that was it.
There you
That's
go.
That's a wrap. 34 years.
And now here you are. So let's talk about this thing with the French Quarter shooting and the ankle monitor and the judge that was notified, because I saw, you know, we're friends with all these people, right? Rafael Goyeneche with the Metropolitan Crime Commission. I saw him talking about how the thing should never have been pled down. But then I talked to Jason Williams yesterday, and he told me that, well, even after it was pled down and there was some kind of problem with the casings or something, some kind of evidentiary problem, they had to plead it down. But even after that, the guy violated parole, and the DA said, no, keep him in jail, and the judge let him out on an ankle monitor after he was let out. And I don't have the note in front of me here, but I think it was like 40-something times that he violated the ankle monitor release. And the judge was notified, and, you know, Matt Dennis over at ASAP, they're on top of it, notified the judge that this guy was violating his order, and the judge didn't do anything about it. Now you got one person dead, 3 shot, if I don't have the story in front of me here. I think that's what it was. You got 2 in jail, I think, 2 at large, 1 in jail, 2 at large. Tell me if you're going to go back and do an anatomy of this, Chief, and where this failed, and if something like this could be prevented at all. Just tell me about the whole, your take on all of this.
Okay, so, you know, we start with this, that in any city, about 2-3% of that population, and it works out across the nation as well, less than 2% of the entire nation of the country is actually incarcerated in state prisons or federal prisons for crimes that require jailing. So first off, we're not talking about a huge population. Secondly, judges in Louisiana are elected every 10 years. Maybe that's a little too long. I don't know. It seems like these decisions fade in the background when someone's up for re-election 9 years later.
I didn't realize that. It's a 10-year term?
I think so. I could be wrong,
no,
but
no,
I think
I'm
it's a 10-year term.
I didn't realize that. Okay,
yeah. It could be. I know they have to be an attorney for 10 years before they can run. I might have got the numbers. But here's the thing. Judges at the state level are elected by the people as a representative democracy of what the people want. Do the people of New Orleans want this kind of crime, right? So that'd be the way of looking at that. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I mean, I get what Mr. Williams said. I get what Rafael said. I trust and respect both of them in different ways. But guess what? The public just doesn't understand. You got an electronic device on an ankle, and a judge is notified repeatedly that a violation is occurring. Why isn't this guy one of the 2% who's incarcerated? Mm-hmm. Why is he the one that they keep taking chances on when 98% of the people are held hostage by these 2%? And that's kind of the way I look at it, is that every crime requires a victim. That means somebody got hurt. And every time you look at these repeat violent offenders, Tommy, they all have the exact same profile. They're later in life than they can be touched by maybe some of the help programs that you would like to think would help. Sometimes they're just not going to matter to them. And they continually show to the criminal justice system that they do not intend to comply. this guy is clearly an example. I don't intend to comply. You can put two bracelets on me. I'm still not going to comply. And if a judge or a court or a police department doesn't hold those people accountable, what's to stop them from continuing to do so? Now, I get the people who are all concerned about criminal justice reform. There's a lot of reasons for reform I think we can all agree on. But I think everybody agrees with no. Repeat violent offenders do not deserve the right to walk the streets of citizens who are healthy, happy, and following the law. So it's a breakdown in the system. It's a breakdown in the clear system of this guy sending the message he wasn't going to pay attention to the law.
Yeah, let me take a break. The only reason I wanted to bring it up, look, I consider both Raphael and Jason friends, as do you, I'm sure. But mm-hmm. I just think this is a case study of how the system failed and how it led to a brazen French Quarter shooting at a couple of different levels. And it goes to how once somebody decides to break the law, what it takes to keep them in jail and at what point it can fail. And we'll go through that, okay, when we come back?
Mm-hmm.
All right, good. Ronald Surpass, our guest. 6 years, the term for a judge that's elected. We looked that up just, and not trying to call you on anything, Chief. We just wanted to make sure we got it accurate. 820, traffic now, WWL. All right, 825, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Just to be clear, and I don't want to get lost in the weeds here. A state judge, I think, is 6 years. Supreme Court judges, appeal court judges, 10 years. That's not the point. Let me go back with Ronald Surpass here and talk about both. You got the second line shooting and you got the shooting in the French Quarter. From that point, Chief, and I think, you know, people watch Law and Order, they don't understand sometimes the way things really work. In the criminal justice system, So a crime happens, police go out, they try to gather as much evidence as they can, right?
Correct.
And then after that, go ahead. Do you take me through it?
Yeah, so the police will respond to the scene and they'll render aid and they'll protect evidence. The system's based on evidence so that a defendant who has all the rights to defend himself can challenge the evidence. Then they bring it to the prosecutor who has to bring it to a level called beyond reasonable doubt, where a jury would convict 12-0 or the defendant would plead guilty. Oftentimes you see these multiple defendants plead guilty because it allows them to evade more serious punishment because they usually know that they've done it. Then the judges have to decide what type of confinement, if they're guilty, are they going to continue to be under? Is it as a result of statutory requirements, like if you kill somebody, it's life without probation and parole? Or is it a graduated scale, 5 to 10? And the key piece here in the shooting that happened in the French Quarter is the judge was engaged in making decisions about when that offender was going to be released on an ankle monitor. And it's the judge's responsibility at that point to enforce their rule. The police, the sheriff, the monitoring system, they don't have to be psychics. I'm listening to that commercial you did a few minutes ago. The judge doesn't have to be a psychic. If someone continues to refuse the orders of the court, you don't need psychic intervention to know this person does not intend to follow the rules. Then those cases go to the opportunity for people to challenge evidence against them. And if they win, they win. If they lose, they lose.
So when it comes to the volume of cases that criminal courts handle in the country, there aren't the resources for every case to go to trial. I'm not talking about this specific case. I'm talking mm-hmm. about in general, and it goes to plea bargaining. I was watching a rerun of Better Call Saul last night for whatever reason. This popped into my head.
Great show.
It is, but that the plea bargain, if plea bargaining were to go away, the courts would be overwhelmed, would they not?
Absolutely. Not only would the courts be overwhelmed, but those who are guilty of a crime who are looking to make a better deal for themselves wouldn't even have the chance to do that. Plea bargaining has two complete sides. One is it fair to people who can't afford good lawyers to plea away their future? There's probably some really good questions to ask about that. But Tommy, what about the multiple armed robber who's up on his third armed robbery who says, look, I don't mind pleading if you give me 5 years instead of 50. So plea bargaining is a two-way street where you have to be sure that people are being given good legal advice that's proper, and people are going to take a chance to reduce their sentences when they know they're guilty. So, yes, you can't manage the system with every case going to trial, and there are two questions. Are people being fairly advised and people using it to reduce sentences for their conduct that they know they did?
And the other part of that is, from the prosecutor's standpoint, and this goes back to the police work and the preservation of evidence, do they have a case with which they can get a conviction? Because at some point, it's kind of like the Wheel of Justice casino. You got to figure out whether you're better off getting half a loaf or none, right? Or a whole loaf?
And that's part of the other part. That's the other half of discretion. The police can't enforce every law violation, and prosecutors can't try every case. So it's a synthesizing of reality of case information versus what you might be able to get. By and large, prosecutors and police are on the same team, but they play on two different sides of the ball. It's that natural tension that has to occur. Prosecutors don't accept cases just because police made them. They have to apply their understanding of the law and what they can do.
What does a district attorney, a DA's office investigator do?
They make the they close gaps that the police weren't able to close at the time they made the arrest. Sometimes much better information comes out later. DA investigators are crucially important, and Jason, like any DA, deserves to have as many as they can have because it helps the system work better for the defendant and the victim, but the victim first.
That is an important part of this that a lot of times doesn't get attention, don't you think? The investigators.
That's exactly right.
DA's office?
Yeah, I think the DA office needs them as much as police need police because they're kind of doing two different pieces of the same pie, but they have two different responsibilities, and that's an important thing that they should be staffed for.
Thank you, Chief. Have a nice Thanksgiving. Appreciate your time, as always.
You too.
Ronald Sir, past professor, practice Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief. We'll talk with Steve Geller about the Saints and the Rams when we come back right now, 8:30, time for WWL First News.